soul today, like always.
Recording in progress.
Fucking that works. Good morning, Rablazer. Okay. Cross page 306 Pasik Vav. 306 Pasik Vav. Heat Darkam Choshech Vichal Lak Lakois. Umalach Hashem worried from. May their way be dark, be filled with darkness and vachalaklakos. Chalaklakos means slippery.
Smooth.
And basically means, that we'll see in the Rashi and the Mitzudas, it means that when it's dark, you can't see where you're going. It's dangerous. When it's light,
chalak is smooth, and
chalak
is super smooth.
Super smooth. Like Adam is red, and Adam is Yirakrak. Yirakrak and Adam. It's Yerok is green, Yirakrak it's very green. Dam, Dalad Mem is red, blood red, and Adam is a super
deep
red. A deep red. So
that's
here you
have... Right. That's right, when it's repeated, it shows the emphasis. On the chapter, like you say. By the way, I want to mention, I get a mazel tov, my daughter's daughter had a daughter.
Woo!
And the eighth daughter, that's the three wives of daughter. After my wife,
Mazel tov, mazel tov. Shalav nachas, and it should be a necham. There's Mordechai Mintz. Mordechai Mintz. Mazel tov, and she should bring you a lot of nachas, and as well bring you nechama. Nechama,
right.
Named it after your wife. Great granddaughter. Beautiful,
right.
Beautiful.
Okay. Bas Yehuda Leib HaKayim. She's a Bas Kayim.
Also a Kayim. Wow. Okay.
The child that was born is Bas Kayim.
Very nice. Beautiful.
Okay.
Enjoy the nachas. Mazel tov.
Okay,
so back to page 306. Over here is what Mordechai just mentioned. Chalak lakos. Remember this repetition of a word like yirakrak, adamdam, and as Ramachol pointed out as well, over here we had chalak means smooth, and when we repeat the lamed and the kuf, that comes to emphasize very, very smooth. So if it would be light outside, you'd be walking in a place of brightness, and the lights are turned on, and you would walk down in an area where it's slippery, it's dangerous. You may slip and fall. And if you're walking in a place that it's not slippery, where it's smooth, where it's paved and there's traction, but it's dark at night, it's also dangerous. So it's dangerous when it's dark on a paved road, and it's dangerous when it's during broad daylight when the road you're traveling on is extremely slippery. Al achas kam v'kamo, when the two go together. When it's pitch black darkness.
What page did you want?
Page 306. 306.
What?
306.
306, thank you.
306. So when you put together the combination, of it being smooth, slippery, and it's dark, and there's darkness, that only adds to the danger in traveling down this. And right, excellent. There's a third element. Okay, so Rav Kalman is saying there's a third element. If a person is being chased, so then when it's broad daylight and it's not slippery, it's also dangerous. When a person is running away for his life, he's being chased, and those two come together. Alachas, kava kava, all three. You have achutav shulish. It's slippery, it's dark, and you're being chased. Then you're finished. There's no chance the person is certainly going to stumble. Let's look at the air conditioning now.
Why is it so light? It's a little bit warm here.
I put it up to.
Okay, no, it's good. You're right, because you know you can't really predict. It's good. It's good. Everything is good. Don't worry. It's good. Okay, let's go further. Okay, so Malach Hashem, the Malach Hashem pursues. Let's see, Pasuk Zayin. Zabot ki chinam tamduli shachas rishta. For no reason, tamduli did they set. Tamduli means like to hide. To be timing me like hatzmon on Shabbos. You bury, you conceal. Sorry.
We don't have any translation.
Oh, you don't have the Judaic translation today.
I can only carry one book.
Okay. Right. Tamlu is hatzmona. Hatzmona means to basically conceal, to cover, to bury. Lishachas, to hide. Peinon, po nitzmon, it's put away for safekeeping. Peinon,
other
Mizmorah. Okay. Yeah, it's put away for safekeeping. Po Nitzman, Peyman. Every Kever begins with is Peyman, a trap. And over here we have Kichinam for no reason. Tumbly Shachas, they have put away. They have hidden. In this context, it means they've hidden. They have disguised a Shachas, a pit. Rishdom, Shachas is a pit. Rishdom is a trap. Chinam, for no reason, Charfu l'nafshoy, how they dug. Okay, so the word Shachas is a pit. The word over here, Charfu, means to dig. L'nafshoy, they dug a pit for my neshama to put an end to my existence. Let's pasik, pasikhes. Tiva ehu Shoah. May you, Hashem, bring upon them Shoah. Now, Shoah, obviously, is a very sensitive word in our vocabulary. We use it as a reference to the Holocaust. There's a bit, we once had a discussion, when exactly did that word become popular? It came much later. The word Shoah that we today take for granted is a term that is used in reference to the Holocaust is a more modern word. That was not the word that was used right away. After the Holocaust, people did not, when they spoke about the Holocaust, they didn't use
a label for it.
What?
They
didn't have a label. Because this itself is a big topic of discussion, the label, how to refer to the Holocaust. And what is the label? And the label today, but 99% of the Jewish people, they refer to it as the Shoah. The Shoah, and then many people, there are people in the Haredi world that are not happy with that word. They don't like that word. We discuss this many, many times. The word Shoah, it has a connotation of chaos. Chaos. And the Holocaust...
Desolation.
There are many meanings. It's not so simple what the word means.
Or darkness. I think Rashi says darkness.
Darkness. Okay. We're going to get. Right. So the truth is, it is thoroughly impossible to define the Holocaust in one word. There's no way you can give a word. You can give a word to define the Holocaust. In the Kinois, there's a very popular kin that was written by Rav Shimon Schwab. By Rav Shimon Schwab. For the Halakha, the Kedoshim, the Zeh of the Kedoshim, and it is interesting, it's fascinating that the word that he selected on his own to reflect upon the Holocaust, or even the word Holocaust, is who gave you the word Holocaust? It's also, who says that's the right word to refer to this, is the word Dei Ro'on. It's very fascinating that he selected in this Kina, the only word that he uses is Dei Ro'on. Dei Ro'on is one of the last psukim in Sefer Yeshaya, and what it means there is, it means basically like a Holocaust, the world coming to an end, and it means Dai Re'ia. Dai means enough, like Sha'omar L'Olamai, Dai, enough. Rayon means to look. When you, and the Mitzudah is there, or the Mefarsh Rashi, the Mefarsh from there, say the word Dei Ro'on means, it is something that is so horrible. You cannot even, when you begin to try to contemplate, to behold what happened, your immediate reaction is, die.
No.
Enough, I can't.
So
I can't even go near this, it's so horrible.
I'm looking at that Kina right now. It's interesting that Archbo chose to translate the word as the gruesome fate.
That's not a really great translation. Okay, a translation is all...
You see, he's also trying to play it into the word, whether he worked the line around Deiraon, Dor Vador, Shel Dor Acharon.
The gruesome fate?
So you see Dor and Deiraon work together in the lines. Maybe he started with one and then worked the other around it.
Interesting. I'm not so sure if Shimon Schwab had in mind, when he wrote the word Deiraon, I'm not so sure he had in mind. He had in mind the gruesome fate is what he meant.
That could be a superimposed Art World translation.
Yeah, of course. I mean, every translation is like that.
I don't know if he had approval or not.
I don't think anyone else will do any better. I mean, every translation is it's a translation.
In these matters, it's inadequate.
Exactly. And look, even the word Dei Ro'on to refer to the Holocaust, that's also inadequate. But the word Dei Ro'on in Sefer Yeshaya, we once learned this, the very Sefer Yeshaya, is a word which in all of Tanakh is possibly one of the harshest words to describe a tragedy. That the tragedy is so overwhelming, horrific, you can't even discuss it. Dai Re'ia. It when you attempt to look, just even to glance at what happened, die means I have to hold myself back. I can't.
There are no words.
That's another translation. However, even though Rav Shimon Tarabi used that term, Deiraon, and I think there's a very, I don't know if it's on paper, Rav Yitzchak Hutner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he also was not a fan of the word Shoah, and I don't know what word he used. Okay, Churban Europe is a very unfair word thing. Say Churban Europe, it's not only Europe, it was the whole world. The word Europe, why Europe? Europe, the whole, everyone is a survivor. Hitler wanted to destroy all the Jews in America. He had us in his crosshairs.
He really wanted to say
Lita. Why only Lita? Litas. Why Lita? What about the Russians? What about the Poland? The Polacks? And what about the whole Hungarians? How can you just say? How can you thank you? How can you say Lita? It was a churban to the world, And there's new evidence coming out every single day that the number 6 million is not the real number. There were a lot more.
It's over 7 million for sure.
It's 7 million for sure. They say it could be it was even a lot more. And even now they released this.
10 years ago they had given a number at least 6.9. The new number then.
That was then, 10 years ago.
I said now they.
They didn't before Auschwitz, in 41, 42, they wiped out in the Ukraine, there were cities, one after another. There were no records. They quietly went in and they just wiped out thousands and thousands of Jews, and it's almost impossible to recover their remains. There are a lot of things that have become to light over the years, and many people have challenged the number 6 million is not correct. It's a lot more. Look, this year they released film from Eichmann. When Eichmann was captured, before he was captured, I think when he was in Argentina, someone interviewed him. And he spilled the beans. He said a lot of things that were first revealed to the public very, very recently. And he said a number, 10.3 million. 10.3 million. No one really, and I don't know, they try to interpret what he meant. They have the film, what he meant. 10.3 million. He said we were aiming for 10.3 million. So it was such 0.3 with such precision. There are a lot of mysteries. It's not good. Whatever it is, it's not good. And
but
here,
Ezra explains it very nice. Ra'a sheyishta'e kol shum'a. Above and beyond imagination.
Which we reading? Where are you reading from? We're reading from the Ibn Ezra?
Ibn Ezra.
What part? Ches? Tivo ehu l'chol echad ro'ah on evil, sheyish to be in shock, sheyish to echol shema, to be shtoimein.
How can it happen? We don't understand.
We don't understand, okay.
You cannot describe it, it's a
mishtaot. Okay, the word shoah in any event, in Kabbalah in the Kabbal, it is the meaning of Klal Yisrael, many and among all stripes and forms, to use the word shoah to refer to the Holocaust. That's the way it is. There's no changing that. And the word Shoah has to be defined. In Tanakh, it's defined over here, I think in Sefer Tehillim by the Mefarshim, differently than it's defined in Sefer Yeshaya. Yeshaya, the word Shoah there usually means chaos, a state of chaos, pshuto kimashmo. The reason why some of the Gedolim did not like the word Shoah is because you can't. Nothing happens by. The word chaos has a connotation that Hashem is not present. Hashem is present. It takes a lot of emuna. No one's denying that. That it takes an enormous amount of emuna to acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was present. But to the average observer who's witnessing such horrific pain, suffering, tragedy, and genocide, it's the expression that many felt. Was a feeling and emotion of chaos, which is what the word Shoah usually is translated as. And from a religious point of view, which is definitely something which is not for the faint of heart, we're not allowed to say that. We're not allowed to say that something happens just by itself. There is the Yad Hashem, in every detail, there is the Yad Hashem. It's hard to see. No one's denying the fact that it's very difficult to see. And the word Shoah does not do justice to the acknowledgement that the tsar, the pain, the horror, the tragedy of the Holocaust was the Yad Hashem. Okay, the whole kinos is, that's the goal of the whole kinos, is to recognize tragedy is the Yad Hashem. Okay, let's just read a little bit further, we'll go through the parashah inside. So here the pasuk over here is pasuk chazal. Over here, David HaMelech is cursing his enemies. Tivo'ehu, may Hashem bring upon them Shoah, may you bring upon them Shoah, a churban, a destruction, lo yedo, a churban, that's lo yedo. We have to more precisely translate that of a churban lo yedo. Let's look right away at the Mitzvah David on the bottom of the page 306. Tivo'ehu, tavo'yolav choshech, shelo yedo lihi zoher. Where the victim, where my enemy, does not have the ability to defend himself. He does not have the ability to guard himself from what is coming. Okay, you want to say that in reference to the Holocaust, that it was so overwhelming, the force of what overcame them was so overwhelming. Lo yedo, there was no plan. That we could use to guard ourselves from what was coming.
What?
Yeah.
No,
he's speaking about his enemy. I'm saying, we have borrowed. Everything is Mida Keneged Mida. Everything is Mida Keneged Mida. But he's cursing them and he's saying, may it tivo ehu, may it come upon him. Tavoy olav, upon him. Tivo ehu. Tavoy olav. Choshech, he translates the word Shoah, the Mitzubes David, translates the word, and Sin as well, translates it as darkness. Lo Yedo means the intended recipient of this punishment does not have a technique to guard himself from what is coming upon him. Let's go further. Virishta Yasher Toman Tilkido, he should fall in his own trap. He should do himself in the trap that he set for others. May he fall into Asher Tman Kichena Derech Lahatmin Ulchasves. We'll come later on. We'll come in a moment. Okay. Asher Tman Tilkido Bishoah Yipol Ba. So the word Bishoah over here again is being repeated, and according to the Mitzudos David, it means again darkness. That he will fall into it. He will fall into this darkness. Okay, we'll see more in a few moments. Let's read some sukkim. Pasuk test. V'nafshi togil b'Hashem. My neshama, on the other hand, rejoices in Hashem. Tosis bishuaso, takes pleasure in his salvation. Pasuk yud. Let's read one more pasuk. Pasuk yud. Kol atzmo sai toymarna Hashem yichamocha. All of my bones, they declare Hashem, who is like you. Matzil ani mechazak mimenu, you save an ani, a poor man, from one who is more powerful than him. The ani ve'evyon migozlo, and an ani nevin, you save them from those that try to rob and steal from them. Okay, there are many ideas being presented. Let's go through them one at a time. Let's start now with the Mitzvah's Dovin from the top, on page 306, Pasik Vav. Pasik Vav over here is saying, Yidam yom choshech v'chalak lakos. May their way be darkness and may be slippery. Umalach Hashem, right from it, and Malach Hashem pursue them. Let's see the list of it. Nidakam Cheshach, Lubal Yiru Lihishomer. They should be dark, they do not know how to guard themselves from obstacles, impediments on the road. Viyyeh Darkam Cholok, may their way be smooth. Viyim Adu Raglam, may their feet, may they stumble. Be'es Yenusu Kishayir, their fame, Hamalach, when the Malach pursues them. This is a mashal. This is just an example. Sheyu nil kadim b'tzaretz v'lo yuchul yinatzel. They should stumble in their difficulties, and they should not be able to be spared. Okay, so to review from where Rav Kalman said and Machol said, there are over here three different elements. Each one by itself is dangerous. When all three come together, there's no way you can escape. When it's dark outside and the lights are off, and you try to walk around in the darkness, it's inevitable you're going to hurt yourself. You're going to fall. if it's bright daylight, but the path that you're taking is super duper slippery, it's inevitably going to fall. If it's bright light and there is a paved road, but you're running, you're fleeing, you're in person, someone is chasing after you, you also, it's inevitable you're going to stumble, you're going to fall and get hurt.
When you have time,
black ice, Rahman al-Islam, you don't see it. You don't see it. That's chalaklakos. So when you have all three together, all three come together, it's impossible. There is no way a person can possibly survive. All three conditions, each one is a danger. When all three dangers come together, there's nothing you can do to escape. I told you about this many times. I used to entertain myself. It's not really entertaining, but it's pretty sad. It's to watch these short videos on airplane disasters. And I didn't realize what a big industry it is. It really is. I found out only recently is that I'm not the only one that somehow gets their adrenaline really all the way boosted by watching these short documentaries where they take a tragedy, a plane crash, and they reenact it. They reenact exactly what happened, and then they showed first how, exactly like a reenactment of what happened, and then they show the investigation. And the goal of these documentaries is to show that how each of these tragedies or near tragedies resulted in new safety measures that were introduced into the airline industry. A redesign of the plane, a new different technique, safety measures. It's incredible how each one of these horrible, horrific disasters changed the industry in very significant ways. And there's one common denominator that goes through every single one of these tragedies. It wasn't one thing that happened. It was always a combination of problems that came together to create the perfect storm. Let's say you have a problem. You have an engine on the airplane. One of the engines stops working. Okay, so it stopped working. So a plane is designed that it can fly on one, it doesn't need two engines. You have four engines, you certainly don't need all four engines. If one engine goes down, you have another engine, it'll keep you going, give you enough power to make an emergency landing. Let's say you have this issue. Okay, if you have this issue, whatever those issues may be, there's a storm and there's turbulence. Okay, you have two engines, you'll be able to survive with very severe turbulence. Let's say there's some other critical failure on the airplane or some situation that goes wrong. All right, there's always a backup plan that has been proven and tested that will get you through the emergency 100%, and the passengers won't even realize what happened. But what happens, what are all these horrific stories? It's when many problems, issues, coalesce. They all come together at the same time. One engine goes out. There is a storm, and the plane's hit by lightning, and there's terrible turbulence, and then there's a communication failure, and there is some other issue. Things that each one by itself is a problem and is a very grave danger, but we've been through that already. We have a solution for those situations. But when many problems come together at the same time, then you're overwhelmed, and then disaster. That is mamish always the chut, the what is it called? That is always the common denominator of every one of these little mini documentaries, these little mini videos dealing with these airplane disasters. It's not one thing that went wrong. It is a combination of multiple things that went wrong at the same time. Things that are usually not related. Things that have no connection one to another. And when they all come together at the same time, it creates a dynamic where you can't escape. You mamish see that in this pasuk. This is what Rav Kalman and Mechol have revealed in the Pshat, this pasuk. Each one of these things, there's a solution. If it's dark at night, so you have you have special goggles you can see in the dark. If it's slippery, you have anti-lock braking system in your car. If the enemy is running after you, you'll have a solution. But when all three come together at the same time, when it's dark, when it's slippery, and when you don't have the presence of mind to concentrate because you're running, you're escaping from a danger, when all three dangers come together at the same time, there's no escape. Disaster is inevitable. That's a yesoid. That yesoid I learned from these documentaries in a very profound way. It's very, very true. And you see this here in this pasuk, and you know, and what is this really? It's really the story of Purim in reverse, the opposite. The story of Purim was where HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged a whole number of events. Each one by itself would not have done anything for Klal Yisrael. The fact that Mordechai happened to be in the right place at the right time and heard about big son Vesaresh, no, nice story. The fact that Esther was taken as the queen, no, interesting, so she was taken as the queen. The fact that Mordechai and this, each little thing by itself would not have resulted in anything whatsoever. But when they all came together at the same time, it created the Purim miracle. And this was clearly the Yad Hashem. Rachmana Litzlan, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Churban upon Klal Yisrael, Hashem brings together all of the events at the same time, Rachmana Litzlan, to punish us. And you know, that's really the connection between Purim and Tisha B'Av. There are many similarities that bring together Purim, and Tisha. These are the only 2 days of the year when we lay in the nigun of Eicha. Okay, Tisha B'Av is obviously Eicha. And Purim, 4 Pesukim in Megillas Esther are recited in the nigun of Eicha. The only 2 days of the year when we do not recite Kadesh Sholem, when we leave out Tiskabel Tzalai Sohoin Uva'u Sohoin, is Purim and Tisha B'Av. We don't, when the Megillah is over, and when Megillas Eicha is finished, and when we finish Megillas Esther, we say Kaddish Biloy Tiskabel. Why? This is the only 2 days. The only 2 days publicly the Shliach Tzibor says Kaddish without Tiskabel. It's an element of Avelus to 1 degree, where we're not saying Tashem except our prayers, because when Purim is over, the bottom line is there is no Beis Hamikdash, and on Tisha B'Av obviously there is no Beis Hamikdash, but on a deeper level, the connection between Purim and Tisha B'Av is the Yad Hashem in bringing together events and elements that each one on its own is benign. But when they all come together and interact, it creates a storm. Purim, Hashem went out of his way to bring them all together, to bring about a miracle, salvation. Tisha B'Av, and the story of suffering of Klal Yisrael in Jewish history, is where each problem, in and of itself, we'll get through. We have a problem in Klal Yisrael, we'll get through the problem. But when multiple issues come together at the same time, it's disaster. It's a new dynamic.
The same thing. The previous pasuk. Mots is
nothing.
Okay.
Oh,
there is wind. So you know it's
a good.
Aha.
Same idea. You need many conditions to come together to bring about a korban. Okay. So this is a very important idea, and especially very relevant to Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is not a day of miracles of korban. Think about it. You study Churban, it's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent in a bolt of lightning and just destroyed us. There were many conditions that came together at the same time which created a disaster. Each condition, each element in and of itself, we've been there, we've done it. We had politicians that are troublemakers. You know, Hitler rose to power. Okay, so there are many Hitlers who rose to power in Jewish history. So you wait out the storm. You wait out the storm until either they die, or they're voted out, or there's some other political disaster, there's some scandal when they're thrown out of office. Okay, this happened. So how come Hitler was able to succeed? There are many Meshugoyim out there. There are many Hitlers out there. How come Hitler was able to succeed? Because there were other conditions that were happening at the same time, which created an environment which allowed this to happen. Okay, I'm not an historian to go into all the details, but it's very clear.
Historians don't probably agree that
What?
Historians don't totally agree on this.
But the principle, I believe, is definitely a true principle. Most of the tragedies of the Jewish people in Klal Yisrael, it's a combination of elements where each one in and of itself we would have been able to overcome naturally.
Right.
But when they all coalesce,
it's a perfect storm.
Okay, Hurricane Sandy. I once read a fantastic article about Hurricane Sandy was the perfect storm where there were many variables that came together, many elements that came together to destroy New York City. Okay, to destroy
to.
It was a full. That was a, one major element. So there's always a full moon. Okay, every it happened on the 15th day of the month. Okay, and of the Jewish month, lunar month. The tide was very high, and there was a nor'easter. A nor'easter was coming in. There were many, many variables which all coalesced into the, well, as they say, the perfect storm. Each one by itself, it happens all the time. You need the magic of them all coming together. Well, the same way in nature, there was a Hurricane Sandy where there are many conditions, weather conditions, which came together to bring about this horrific event. Likewise, in Jewish history, when Klal Yisrael suffers at the hands of other people, it's also, if Hashem wants to wake us up and bring upon us punishment, for whatever the reason may be, it's Hashem brings about different elements at the same time. Purim was exactly the same thing, but there it was for our benefit. Okay, let's go further. Pasuk, now we go to Pasuk Zayin. And the Mitzvot is Zavid Chinam Aloy Chamas Bechapi Chinam L'Navshi, for no reason, I did not commit a crime. Ki Chinam Tam Nuli, I have done nothing wrong. This is the story of Jewish history, the suffering of the Jewish people. What did the Jews do to deserve this suffering? Nothing, absolutely nothing. What did I do wrong? There are many of these horror, lately reading some of these horror stories about the Holocaust, especially with children. And when children were punished, children were tortured, they would say, it's very common to hear this, even the Crusades, that's what I remember saying, but in the first Crusade, a child would say to the mother, "Mother, I'm a good boy. I didn't do anything wrong. Why is this happening to me? Why are you doing this to me? Why are they doing this to me? I didn't do anything wrong." You know, parents are always telling their children, "Be good, be good, be good. If you're good, I'll reward you, I'll give you a prize, I'll give you some treats. And if you're not going to be good, I'm going to hit you, I'm going to punish you." And children listen, and they're good. And there are some very good children. And then when our enemies come to torture them, and they committed terrible crimes, many stories of children witnessing and being subject to horror, children, they would say to their parents, "But mommy, I'm a good boy. I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything to deserve this." And that's what it says over here. David over here is speaking like a little boy. Ki chinam, for nothing. What did I do to deserve this? What do they hate me so much for? Ki chinam, aloi chamas b'chapi. For nothing. Tomnu li shachas. Did they prepare for me a grave? Okay, further. Now, what does it mean? Rishtam, I left out a word. Tomnu li shachas. Rishtam. I am assuming that these two words go together based upon the trop, but the trop in Tehillim is not necessarily a proof to anything, and so the Mefarshim don't feel obligated to follow the rules of the trop. But I'm assuming that these two words go together.
Like a pit
covered with Rishtam. The pit, and I was reading a lot, it was a chinam, for no reason, charfu, did they dig, lenafshi, what does it mean, lenafshi, kamo legufi, it means with regard to my neshama, barzel bar nafsho. I read a lot lately about Babi Yar, okay, I got very, very, very curious about Babi Yar, and I'm having already nightmares from what I'm reading about, because, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I forgot already, time, I can't keep track of the time. The Russians, I think on the sixth day of their invasion of Ukraine, bombed a Babi Yar, a building right, I think in the compound of Babi Yar. They were aiming to knock out no one really knows what they were doing. They claimed it was an accident. Nothing's an accident. There was a broadcast tower. There's a tower there in Babi Yar, a tower that is used for communications, an antenna, a television broadcast tower, and they were supposedly trying to knock out this tower, and the missile missed, and it hit a building in that area of Bab Yar. What is Bab Yar? In 1941, an Erev Yom Kippur, after the Germans, the Nazis, invaded Ukraine. Ukraine at that time was under the authority of the control of the Soviet Union, the Russians, and they invaded, and they put out notices that all of the Jews should come to this cemetery, basically, to this area called Bab Yar, and they should bring with them their possessions, their jewelry, and their valuable possessions. And who assisted? The Ukrainians. The Ukrainians were very eager to assist the Germans in assembling the Jews. And all the Jews did not know what was going to be. All the Jews, they thought that they were going to be taken to labor camps. That's what. And instead, they assembled there. They immediately took away their possessions. They stole them. They took their documents and burnt them to destroy their identities and the records of what's going to happen. They told them to take off their clothing, to go naked, and then they told them to enter into this hidden, like, path. That's exactly what it says over here. It was a reshes. It was a trap. And when they came out of this area, there was a big pit, a shachas, and they had them stand there on the edge of the pit naked, and they shot them one by one. And within 48 hours, Erev Yom Kippur into Yom Kippur, or was it, I'm not sure if it was on Yom Kippur, it was the day before, it was Erev Yom Kippur, they murdered about 34,000 Jews, one at a time. I don't think it's a coincidence that I'm reading this pasuk here right after I spent a lot of time reading about Bab Yar, and the horror didn't end there. The horror went on and on. What happened after they did this crime? The Germans went to extreme measures to conceal the crime. They covered the entire area with earth, with bulldozers. No one should know. And when later it became known, there were survivors who began talking and reporting what they did. They brought in Jews to dig up the bodies and to burn them, to remove evidence of their crime. Later, when the Soviets, the Red Army, came in and took back Ukraine, Kiev, from the Nazis, the Soviets also tried to conceal what happened. Why? Because the Soviets hated the Jews just as much as the Germans. And then, during that time, they ended up killing there approximately, they say, 100,000 people were killed. Russians were killed there as well, but the vast majority of the people that were killed from these 100,000 people were Jews. And the Soviets also tried to cover up this crime by using this area as a garbage dump. You know, where you send the sanitation comes, take the garbage, to dump all the garbage there and to store their construction equipment. Years later, when the word got out what really happened, the Russians were no longer able to conceal what happened, so they created a memorial only for Russians, not for Jews, to the degree that it was a crime to say that a Jew was killed in Bab Yar. Only Russians were killed. Only Russians. To make mention that there was Jewish suffering was a crime. And only much later, like I think in 1970, finally was the world forced to acknowledge the crime that took place here. 34,000 Jews were, these Jews, by the way, who were these? The crime was so significant because who was killed? Mainly women, children, and the elderly. Because all of the young people, the able-bodied men, already either fled or were conscripted into the Russian army. So the only ones that were left in Kiev at that time that were gathered to this area were women, children, and the elderly, murdered in cold blood in the most horrific way possible. And, you know, there are two crimes that happened in Bab Yar. Crime number one is the murder, which is unforgivable. And if you read some of the eyewitness testimony, Yad Vashem has eye interviews. I watched some of them. It's unbelievable to listen to these people. These people, I don't know if they're still alive. Okay, the people, when they were interviewed them, they were Zakenim, and they were telling these incredible stories. Most of the survivors, they fainted as they were standing on the edge of this ravine before they were shot. They were so traumatized, they fainted and they fell into the pit before the Nazis shot them. And then they woke up with layers of bodies on top of them. And some of them tried to, in the middle of the night, tried to escape, to climb out. And many who tried to climb out were shot on the spot because there were guards waiting. And some of the eyewitnesses says that this pit, it actually went up and down because there were so many people that were still alive because they were just shot. And it moved up and down because there were many people that were still alive. And just the description of what happened is literally not to be believed what went on over there. In addition to that crime, there was another crime, the cover-up, where the Nazis went out of their way into extreme measures to hide the fact, to hide what they have done. The Soviets also are thoroughly guilty in trying to conceal the crime that took place. And it's, you know, it's ironic to me is that here, this year, the Russians invade Ukraine all over again. The Ukrainians with the Russians. And what do they shoot down? They shoot down a tower that's used to broadcast. It's almost as if the irony, this was a crime that was concealed. And the people who are dead, Dmei Achicha Tsoyakim Elai Min Ho'adama. And what are you using in the modern world to broadcast, to signal? You use a broadcast tower. No. We don't want anyone to know. I mean, obviously, I'm saying nonsense, and technically, what I'm saying is the irony of shooting down a broadcast tower on top of Babi Yar is just a reminder of the horror of the second crime. It wasn't bad enough, the act, the atrocity of murdering 34,000 Jews in such a horrific way. You have to deny it. You have to conceal it. You have to tell the world, silence. We don't want you to know about this. They would call this disinformation, right? Disinformation. Don't report. Don't report that we murdered 34,000 Jews. It's disinformation. Shut down the broadcast center. Shut down all of these people, anyone that wants to report this information. It's unbelievable. It's like what it says in the Pasuk, Dinei Achich Kayin murdered Hevel. Hashem says to Kayin, where is Hevel, your brother? So what does Hevel say? Hashomer Achi Anochi. What do you want? The Meyachicha Tsoyakim Alai Minhu Adama. Hevel says, the Kayin says, what do you want from me? Hashomer Achi Anochi. So then ultimately, what does Kayin do? He says to Hashem, Godol Avoini Minisoi. I ask you, what does it mean? What did Kayin mean when he said, when he finally came around to admit, Godol Avoni Minisoi? Pashup shot, he came to admit, I murdered my brother. It's not the pshat. That's not what he meant. Godol avoni minisoy, I try to cover up the murder. The murder is unforgivable. It's unforgivable. But godol avoni, but what is too much for me to bear is the fact that I said to you, Hashem, Hashoymer ochi anoichi, I try to cover up the murder. That is even worse than the murder itself. Not to acknowledge, to deny from the victims, the Kedoshim, to deny, to completely make believe nothing ever happened. That's even worse. Godol avoni minisoy. You have to prove that's the pshat and the pasuk. You have to see what Hashem did to him. Whatever it is, but it's interesting. This is exactly what they did. They hid. They put there, and there were a lot of things, a lot of interesting stories. There was one story, one eyewitness account of an old man he said that he was there, and they were all lined up by this Babi Yar, and they didn't know what was about to happen to them. And there was a soldier, there was a woman holding a child, and a soldier, a young SS officer, went over to this woman and took her child and stabbed her child. Just stabbed the child right in front of the mother. He said that he lost his mind when he saw that. The woman, the mother, after the soldier, after the SS stabbed, she went crazy. She mamsh went crazy, as you could imagine. A senior officer of the SS went over, this is what he said on the recording, the Yad Vashem recording, went over to that young soldier and smacked him in the face. A senior SS officer went over to the young SS officer who murdered the child in front of the mother and caused the mother to go crazy, smacked him in the face, and started screaming at the young soldier, "Why did you do that? Do you realize when you do this, everyone sees what you've done, and now they realize they're going to be killed in a few moments. They're not going to listen to us. There's going to be resistance. They're not going to walk into the ravine to be murdered. We want to make it easy. We have to fool the Jews. We have to fool them. They have to be fooled. If you're going to murder someone like this in cold blood in front of everyone before they get to the pit where we're going to shoot them, there's going to be resistance. They're going to be fooled into thinking they're going to be murdered. No one's going to want to go. So you can't just kill someone publicly. Wait. You have to wait until they pass this path and they're standing by the pit, then you kill them. Can you imagine? Another thing which really horrifies me, this really, really stands out to me, is I noticed this in Flatbush. Very nice, a very beautiful thing. Ed, I don't think there's a nicer day in Flatbush than it's probably true all over the world. Erev Yom Kippur. Erev Yom Kippur, about a half an hour before Kol Nidre, if you walk on the streets, everyone is out. Everyone is walking to shul. Baruch Hashem and Flatbush are a lot of shuls. A lot of shuls. And everyone is out. They finish their Suda HaMafsekes. They're out on the street. They're walking to the Beis HaKnesses for Kol Nidre. The men, many men are wearing already their kittel, and their talis, or they're holding the kittel, their talis bag, and the women are walking. Everyone is walking to shul, and it's quiet. It's solemn. The Yoyim HaKadosh. And everyone goes to shul. That half an hour before Kol Nidre, you go out into the street, you see so many people walking to shul. All of the eyewitness accounts of Babi Yar, they talk about the Nazis put up notices all over the city. Every Jew must report to Babi Yar at this time. It was Erev Yom Kippur. And everyone, they describe how all of the Jews, there were 34,000 Jews, were walking in the street through Kiev to Babi Yar. Erev Yom Kippur. Contrast that to the scene today in Klal Yisrael, Erev Yom Kippur, half an hour before Kol Nidre, where everyone is walking to the Beis HaKnesses for Kol Nidre. And here, everyone was walking to their death, to die al Kiddush Hashem. It's unbelievable. This whole thing became an issue in the news. And what's so horrific is, in addition to the crumb of the denial, what happened with this? It just became now a tool, a talking point, for all the politicians to use as a wedge to win the war, the media of, you see what the Russians, what they're trying to do, so therefore we have to support the Ukrainians did this. It's not that the rhetoric of what the politicians are saying is so insincere. It's just, Babi Yar is now a new opportunity to collect money from the United States. to silence opposition, to present your side of your agenda, to push your agenda forward. We couldn't care less about the Jews. Couldn't give a hoot about 34,000 Jews murdered in cold blood because they were Jews. Couldn't care less. Zelensky could care less. You really believe he can care less? It's just an opportunity to collect a couple more billion dollars international support for the war, to paint Putin as a Russia, which no one's denying he is. And for Putin to say, oh, I'm denazifying Ukraine. What does that mean exactly? No one can figure that out. Try to read the editorials. No one can figure out what he means by that, to denazify. It's just horrific. No one really cares. No one really cares about the Kedoshim. It's just, it's an opportunity to exploit, to push your agenda. And that's another nail in the coffin of the hate, of what happened. And we have to be really careful. It's 81 years since this tragedy occurred, and it's not to be taken lightly, the horror of what happened in Babi Yar. What they did in Babi Yar was exactly what they did in many other cities quietly, and unfortunately the world doesn't know much about it. Babi Yar was the biggest, by far. It was the biggest. They say it's the biggest public, the biggest mass grave in the world, Babi Yar. 34,000 Jews, more, they say even 100,000 people, most of them are Jews, in this massive pit. So here, I just cannot help but talk about this after reading what it says in this pasuk, Ki chinam tamnu li shachas. For nothing did our enemies, did they hide the shachas. That story stands out in my mind, where the Nazi, the SS officer, he was smacked by his superior for killing a Jew in public, because it's going to prevent, the Jews are going to see what's about to happen, and they're going to resist. They tumnuli shachas, he told the officer, we're hiding what we're doing to them. We're hiding the pit from them. Tumnuli shachas rishon chinam. And David says, for no reason, charfu lenafshi, did they dig this pit? Did they prepare this pit lenafshi to take my neshama? Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Listen to the mitzudos tivo ehu. Tavoy lechosh, therefore they may be cursed. May they be cursed with shoah, according to the mitzudos, it means darkness. Lo yeda, we learn over here, it says that they do not know how to escape from. Shelo yeda, asher toman. Next words, till kiddo, may they be trapped, may he be trapped in bishoa, darkness, yipoba, es hapoi race, oy saw, the one that spread this net, may he be fall into it, bishoa, ba vor shachesh love lo yirua. Because of the choshech which comes upon him, may he not see it, may he fall into it, the yipol ba. Ba'Hashem, v'na'av shetogel ba'Hashem, my neshama will rejoice in Hashem, tosis ve'ezrat Hashem, and Hashem's salvation, tosis v'shuaso. Next words of the Mishnah on the next page. Kol atzmosai tomarnu will say, Hashem yichamocho, who is like you, mimo shiokam, who can save like you? Mi'matzlo ani mi'chotzik menu, you save an ani from a person who is stronger. Min ha'oyev hechazak mi'menu, mi'goizlo, mi'mishiroit selugotz, from a person who wants to rob him. You Hashem, you save these people. Now I was just thinking, before we see the Rashi's, we actually only have time, I will see a little bit of Rashi's, is that when it says here the pasuk, a sho'olo yedo. Now the Mitzudas David translates this to mean a darkness, that a person who is the intended victim does not know how to guard himself from. Homiletically, you can interpret this to mean is a shoah, lo yeda, a darkness that no one ever saw before. Lo yeda, it's not known to the world. Such a churban, such a horror, such tragedy was never seen in the world before. And, you know, it's not a coincidence that we use the word Shoah in reference to the Holocaust. And the number 6 million is a number which we cannot possibly comprehend. The First Crusade, how many Jews died in the First Crusade? How many Jews died? So what do you think? The highest number is, that I've ever seen, is 30,000 Jews. And most historians say that it's a gross exaggeration. I have no way of knowing. And many experts say it was about 5,000 Jews in total died. 5,000. So we discussed this before you came. Before you came, we discussed this at length. So we can't go over now, but we said basically over here, the Mitzudah Stavit here says it means darkness. And in Yeshaya, he says it means chaos. Chaos. Okay, we spent some time talking about that. Maybe we'll see other Mepharshim soon. But going back, so how many Jews died? So, no, every Jew is a world to itself. Let's make no mistake about it. But there's a very big difference between the number 5,000 and the number 6 million. It's not even possible to comprehend. In the Khmelnytsky massacres, how many Jews died? So there's also, no one knows. There's no way of knowing. So there are some very, very exaggerated numbers. They write 500,000, a half a million. Many say that's a gross exaggeration. They say more like I don't even know the numbers. Whatever, no one really knows. No one really knows exactly. Some say 30,000 died, 100,000 died. To say 500,000 died is a gross exaggeration. You have to go look at which history book you're reading, you know. But the truth is, no one knows. No one knows exactly what happened. There were no records in those days, and no one felt the need. There wasn't today we're very into recording. Everything is recorded. It's not, that wasn't the attitude in those days. No one really considered it to be such an important thing to record what we record. A tragedy is a tragedy. It's a different world. But to fathom 6 million people, it's just not to be believed. And the torture, the stories of the humiliation, the complete eradication, genocide of Klal Yisrael, it's just not to be believed. And when it says the word Shoah lo yeda, at least in my reading this from our perspective, it means a Churban that no one could comprehend. It's not in the realm of comprehension. There are things which people know, they're experts. You know, Mr. Bloom always used to tell me that used to be when computers first started, there was an operating system language called DAS. DAS. Okay, DOS. DOS, disk app, IBM. IBM created a programming language called DOS. Disk operating system. And it was possible for a person to master the language. You would know every keyword, everything there is to know about DOS, you know, and you become a programmer. And you're the world-renowned expert. Today, it is impossible to know even a fraction of anything about computers. A fraction. There are worlds and worlds of programming languages. There are probably already hundreds of programming languages. And every year there's a new, what's the latest, the most popular? Okay, they're all very similar in concept. No one's denying the fact that they all share the basic concepts. But, I mean, today it's just so vast. You're dealing over here with tragedy. You know, you deal over here, let's say you want to go study the story of Ai. What happened in the Battle of Ai? Klal Yisrael, they come into Eretz Yisrael and they go to battle against the city of Ai, and it says in the Pasuk the Jewish people were defeated. And how many people died? 36 people died. So, I mean, that's a tragedy. They took over here, Kedoshim Utahoidim Kizor Rekia. Chazal said, no, Chas V'Sholem. 36 people didn't die. Only one person died. Asnil ben Kenas. So you open up a sefer and you go into the computer and you study who is Asnil ben Kenas. And Oitra Chochma will spit out every Maimer Chazal, everything someone ever wrote about Asnil ben Kenas, and will super analyze who he was, and will get an appreciation of what the tragedy was. Okay, you go to the First Crusade, 5,000 people, let's say 10,000 people were killed. Okay, that's a lot of people. I can't count so high. 6 million people? Each person has a story to tell. Each person has had a life. Each person had a unique relationship with Hashem. Every person is a world, is a whole world. Even if every person is not a Navi, they're not a Navi, they're not a Tana, they're not an Amora. Every person is a person. Every person is a world. 6 million people? And that's already a short number. And what about the survivors? Okay, the survivors, what happened to them? Traumatized beyond belief. A Shoah lo yeda. A Shoah that cannot be comprehended, cannot possibly be processed in the mind of a human being. When the Metzudas David wrote this, the Shoah didn't happen yet. So he wrote, a Shoah lo yeda, a darkness. I don't know how to escape. I'm trapped. I don't have a plan of action to escape from what's coming upon me. When you didn't see the Holocaust, then you say a Shoah lo yeda means you don't know how to escape. But unfortunately, after reading, and you know, many people here have grandparents and, you know, parents that lived through the Holocaust and the aftermath, and as witnessed survivors, it's something literally, you translate these words in entirely new light. A Shoah lo yeda, it's beyond comprehension. All right, tomorrow, Yiratz Hashem, will do the Rashis and go forward. But right now, we'll take a short break and we're going to continue learning some of the kinos of Tisha B'Av.